Hi.
Welcome, hi, welcome.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Paula, hi, Mandy. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, thank you.
Welcome to Joe. So yeah, we'll wait a couple more minutes just for people to gather and then we'll begin. Did you get my reminder? Did you see that? Okay, good. Well, I'm not sure that system works, so I'm glad it does.
A new system with Zoom that you can kind of book it directly or something.
Using Zoom to take all the bookings and then I just log in and just send a reminder email. It's a lot easier for me because I don't have to deal with any of the admin. Apart from just, occasionally logging in and sending those reminders. Great, let's let some more in. Welcome to Roman. Welcome, Westley. Hi everyone, welcome Naomi. Becklin,
Hello.
hello.
Hi.
Bridget, hello. Claudia, welcome. We'll just wait another minute and then we'll begin. Hi, Kevin, welcome. Yeah, feel free to say hello in the chat if you want. As we arrive, welcome from wherever you are from. I'm sure it's many places. You can put it in a chat. Hello from Cambridge. Hello, boy. London. Welcome. Great. So, let's begin. Some people will probably arrive as we carry on into the seminar. Where to begin? I just want to begin with a kind of acknowledgement somehow, some kind of acknowledgement of the timing of this seminar and of what's happening in the world, and not a feeling of some kind of, I don't know what it was, incongruence or. I couldn't put words to it. I'd have to sit with it. But then, yeah, I'm just aware there's a lot of loss happening in the world. I mean, maybe there always is, but we're really might be very aware and even carrying some of that with us. So I just want to acknowledge in a way that what we might be carrying and, of course, what other people are going for through as we begin this topic. So, yeah, and right at the very end of the session, for those who want, I'm just going to have an unofficial part of the seminar. We're just sitting together for a minute in silence, sending love, whatever, however, we'll find, I'll say more about it when we get there, really, about our own response to that. So, yeah, begin there. But now I begin in my usual way, which would be also just to pause for a moment, just to sense our own bodies, sense our place here. Even though there's this kind of virtual world in front of us, we have our own bodies here. So I just lead that very brief pausing into how we are right now. So sense your support. Sense your support. However it is you're sitting on, it's holding you. Your posture, your space you take up. There's your body and the space you're in. So noticing that, just as it is. And then just momentarily checking in inside. How are you right now? Particularly acknowledging anything in you that might not be feeling okay. It might be physically, emotionally, or worried, or sad, or like all of that is welcome and okay to be here. So yeah, just acknowledging how you are. And when you're ready, bringing that to a close, just looking around if your eyes have been closed, moving a little. So, welcome to the seminar on welcoming grief. My name is Peter Gill. I am a focusing teacher. If you don't know what focusing is, you'll get some glimpse of it tonight. I'll say a little bit more at the end about what that is. Yeah, and tonight I guess I want to introduce this topic of how this practice of focusing can support our welcoming or our relationship with grief. I want to start with a quote by Stephen Jenkinson. Grief is the radical etiquette needed by a death-phobic, grief-illiterate time. Dying is fulfillment, not the end of life. From a young age, we see around us that grief is mostly an affliction, a misery that intrudes into the life we deserve, a rupture of the natural order of things, a trauma that we need coping and management, and 5 stages and 12 steps to get over. Here's the revolution. What if grief is a skill? In the same way that love is a skill. Something that must be learned and cultivated and taught. What if grief is the natural order of things, a way of loving life anyway? Though addicted to security, comfort, and managing uncertainty, this culture could learn to honor, teach, and live grief as a skill as vital to its personal, community, and spiritual life as the skill of loving. So I share that as a way of beginning to t maybe just turn our relationship to grief around. Maybe it's already one of honoring and welcoming it as an essential aspect of experience or a skill, if you like. But certainly I grew up with a sense that it was some kind of failure or that I shouldn't be experiencing it or something to be got over. And and I think that leads to a lot of pain. So yeah, I want to say a little bit my story about my story really around this, and then we'll sort of open up a bit more. I'm going to also be talking a little bit about what makes it hard to approach grief. I'm going to say a little bit about containers to welcome grief. And then we're going to do a little experiential exercise, just in a more really about meeting a kind of grounded self and acknowledgement, so which is part of focusing practice. So yeah, the extract was from Stephen Jenkinson. Someone's actually put his name in the chat, but I don't know where it's from exactly. It's a quote that popped up on one of my these pops up somewhere. But if you put grief as a skill, Stephen Jenkinson, you'd probably find it. So my story of coming across focusing as a practice, in a way, is intertwined with grief. There we go, it's from his book, Die Wise. Thank you. So I came across this practice of focusing on a retreat in 2003, and it was about 6 months after my mum had died. She was only 61, died quite a difficult death, really. So I was on this retreat, yeah, in a space of deep grief and not really knowing how to be with it very easily. I didn't, wasn't articulate really in that language very much. And the meditation teacher on the retreat kind of knew what I was going through and said, "Oh, have you ever come across focusing?" And I went, "No." And said, "Oh, it's about listening to the body." And that was all I needed. Literally, that's all I needed. Oh, right, I have a body. I have a body. And that body wants is trying to tell me something. It's not something I have to ignore and try and think away. It was like it was trying to tell me. I guess what it was trying to tell me was I was grieving, and that needed to be listened to and honored. And so my journey of focusing has been intertwined really with grief. Right from the beginning. And I think in listening to the body, one of the most enduring themes I've come up or sort of met again and again and again in my own practice and in my work with other people and in groups is that what lives in the body is one of the things that lives in the body is unacknowledged grief. We carry a lot of unacknowledged grief in us as individuals, as families, as systems. It's like anything that w wasn't given or granted attention somehow I don't know, I don't want to say it sounds literal, but it kind of lives in the body. So if we spend a lot of our time in our heads, we don't ever meet that. But focusing is this wonderful practice of opening to what our body knows. And a lot of what it knows is about what we've lost. It's not the only knowing it has, but it's one of the key ones. So there's this immediate connection really between this practice of listening to the body and welcoming grief is when we open to what the body knows, inevitably, we open to what it knows about what it's lost, about what was missing. You know, when I have a dog, some of you might have pets, but when I go on a walk with our dog and one of the family goes off, separates, or if I go away for the weekend, you know, my dog will you know, like register it very powerfully that somebody's not here. It's very visceral, animal level. And we're no different from that. You know, we might have other higher functions, supposedly, but we're at least dogs, and dogs are quite incredibly intuitive about who's here and who's not here. And we have that knowing in our body. So, yeah. And I guess the other thing it told me is grief was a bodily process, it wasn't really about thinking. Cognitive at all. It's really about allowing something to emerge at this sort of more, yeah, more bodily level. So I want to share. You know, I have time to do this. Want to share also the other insight that I learned in through this practice was that grief wasn't something to be fixed. In my early days of learning focusing and practicing focusing, as I say, was quite immersed in that sort of grieving process, and there was one session where I was just, you know, paying attention to how I was feeling, and something didn't. I just felt tight in my body, and I was paying attention, and then this image came. This image, kind of from deep in my body, came of this wolf. And this wolf was on a kind of plateau, and the wolf was just howling and howling, like at the top of its lungs. I was already like, whoa! It's like that's how I feel. My body was showing me how I felt, howling and howling, and then I came to realize that, oh wow, this wolf wasn't judging itself. It was just very sort of in its experience, without any judgment, and it really touched me. I was like, wow, okay, it's not judging itself for grieving. It's just letting its feelings be known, you know. And so then, you know, I kind of let myself howl, and that was very healing to let that process happen. So I sort of share that story as, in a way, animals, you know, animals too grieve and they just let it come. They live in their bodies and they let that process happen. Apparently, elephants grieve and even horses and dogs, even like what they call lobsters, cetaceans, sea animals apparently grieve. So yeah, so just pausing there. But I want to Next, I want to touch a little bit on what makes it hard. What makes it hard for us to contact? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's not hard for you actually. For some people, it's very easy being in touch with grief and when some kind of loss. And I'm not talking just about people. All sorts of losses we experience. They can feel it very easily. But for many of us and many people I know, it's quite hard to access, and you might struggle with it. So I want to invite you and curious really, like what makes it hard for you to feel grief or meet grief or allow grief or feel sad or show sadness or yeah, any and that might be something internal for you, it might be something outside. So what are the kind of our barriers and difficulties around this for you? If you're willing to share, that'd be great. And we can put something, you can put it in the chat or you can speak, that would be also fine. So yeah, what makes it hard? Let's gather some of those up a little and see what's there. Upset others. Yeah, right. Thanks. So we maybe we're worried we'll upset other people. It's very common, isn't it? You know, when people start getting upset and crying that I was in a workshop at the weekend and a participant said, "I'm sorry," you know. They were crying and I was like, "Oh, that's so sad that she had to apologize." You know, the tears were tears of joy, actually. They were tears of joy about how much she loved her son. And she was apologizing. And I thought, wow, how come we've ended up like that? So, yeah, I'm just going to read some of the comments. Fear of judgment. Yeah, we fear we'll be judged by other people. Maybe because we have been. I mean, that's possible as children. Most of us are shut down in our sadness. It's too painful to speak about. Yeah, that's right. I'll come back to that later because I want to talk about containers. But yeah, sometimes it's too much, isn't it? So it's too big. Self-judgment, we should be able to be tough. Yeah, we've been taught that somehow grieving is a sign of weakness or a sign of like it's not okay. Fear of losing, yeah, a couple of other ones here. Fear of losing control and will not fear that it will start and not stop. I really want to touch one more on that later. If we've got time. Thank you. We need to get on with things. Yeah, well, that's true. Absolutely, there is something of true in that, isn't there? Not feeling like people can really be present with grief, and people start to give advice. Yeah, that's right, true, isn't it? We might start expressing it, and then people come in to fix, or like we'll feel better in the end, or I don't know, not part of our culture, exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Catherine. Yeah. Powerful that you could grieve then and now it's hard. It's hard to look at that photo. Yeah. Whatever I'm grieving about is not something valid to grieve. Yeah, wow. In our culture we have this sort of hierarchy, don't we, perhaps, of like obviously it's okay to grieve a loss of a person, but to grieve other griefs aren't really allowed. Or even within that, I remember hearing a radio article about someone saying they'd lost a good friend and people just didn't really get it. Like it's okay if you'd lost a parent or a child or brother or sister, but a friend, oh, I just, you know, and like that, even that was somehow less valid. So, breakup, yeah, exactly. Death is a new beginning, and that's easy to focus on. Yeah, of course. Yeah, there's something of that that's true too. Hi, welcome. Grief isn't allowed, it's a taboo subject. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks everyone for sharing this. I mean, what's striking me is a lot of it is about out there. A lot of it is about how not so much there are, I guess there are internal protective mechanisms inside of us. Parts of us that don't want us to feel pain. And then there's also what, and maybe that's also a reflection of what happens outside of us, that our grief and our sadness isn't easily welcomed by others. It's given advice, it's not valued, it's judged. Yes, and so no wonder, really, no wonder we end up with this wealth of experience. Anyway, grief is just a kind of part of it's like, is that what it, I think I sent it in the publicity. Grief is like love with no place to go. I love that quote. Grief is love with no place to go. We don't give it, we don't, we sadly, we don't give it space. Yeah. So we have, yeah, I want to sort of acknowledge something around what I call safety guardians. So these are the parts of us that keep us safe from feeling overwhelmed. And that's definitely part of the work of welcoming grief is really, really taking a step back and welcoming and acknowledging and making friends with those parts of us that don't want us to feel sad. They're doing a good job. That's their role, is to keep powerful feelings at bay. So we don't want to push past them and crash through them. We want to really respect and honor what they're holding for us. And there's a whole lot of detail to that that we could talk about. But really, it's about empathic relationship with those parts of us that want to protect us. They don't want us to get overwhelmed, or they don't want to upset other people, or so yeah, that's definitely a big part of this process of welcoming grief. It's not really to do with grief at all at the beginning. It's to do with welcoming those safety guardians. That's what is my name for it. You could call them protectors or and then, once we have a relationship with those, then it might be a bit easier for us to meet it. But then there might be another issue is finding a safe place for it, a container. So I want to come on to that in a minute. Yeah, just reading some more comments. We feel we have to carry it alone. That's right. So maybe, yeah, let's touch on this topic of containers or containment. So some of you might have come across the work of Francis Weller. I'll put his name in the chat. He's a psychotherapist and a kind of facilitator, writer, activist. He wrote this amazing book called The Wild Edge of Sorrow. And I don't know if it's in the book or in his speaking that I've heard him talk about. I think it was when speaking. He said, grief needs containment and release. Grief needs containment and release. I'll just put a title in. Wild Edge of Sorrow. So grief needs containment and release. Now the trouble is, as one person, it's quite hard to do the same thing, two things at the same time. Hard to hold and also release at the same time. That's why grief is so hard for one body. It's really, really tough because we it kind of it's like a river that needs a riverbank, trees and roots and a whole system to hold it, and then it can flow. If there's no containment, it's hard for it to flow. So it's very, it's not impossible, and we do grieve on our own. Of course, some process happens there, but it's a lot harder. Does that image make sense? This idea of containment and release. So one body it's quite hard to do that. So yeah, so what he spoke of and what he discovered through his work with Indigenous traditions is that grief needs some kind of container, in his experience, community. That would be community, some kind of holding place where we can welcome, or where grief flows. It doesn't even need to be sort of necessarily welcome, because there's a container, it can flow. And I really love that image. And so yeah, this image of the riverbank is powerful, I think. And and no wonder it's so hard for us to allow it. Well, no wonder it doesn't flow so easily within us. And no wonder if it senses judgment of other people, or that it might get advice, or it might get people might freak out or get upset, or like that. That also makes it hard for the river to flow. There's not a safe container there, and we don't have many safe containers in our culture, sadly. Yeah. Maybe at a funeral, if we're talking about the loss of somebody, special. You might be allowed to show some emotion. There might be a little, might be some container there. There may or may not be. But after that, it's rare unless you've got a very good friend or some very understanding companions. It's yeah, not very welcomed and very easily dismissed. I remember someone saying to a friend of mine who actually had lost their father, like it was about a year later, and he said, "Oh, haven't you got over that by now?" I was like, "Oh my God!" Like really so shocked to hear that, you know, like yeah, and that's not unusual. Yeah, it's to sort of say, "Oh, you know, you should be over it." I remember my stepmom saying to me, "Oh well, once my mum died, she said, oh." Well, after the funeral, it'll be better. Like the funeral was like a few weeks later, and I was like, well, that is not true. You know, I knew it even then it wasn't true. Like it took me 3 years really to really process the death of my mother, and one's never the same again. You know, you're changed by that experience. So anyway, just an illustration in a way of the non-welcoming of that we get, sadly. So yeah, we need a safe container. So what could be that container? Well, here's what I've discovered beautifully is focusing. It's a wonderful container. The practice of focusing. The practice of being with another person, or it could be more than one, but just in the way that we do in focusing partnerships, there's somebody there listening without judgment, without advice, without telling you what to do or how to feel or how to be. A welcoming, loving presence of another being is a wonderful container to allow some of that to flow. So I want to sort of celebrate that focusing it can be a safe space where we can allow some of that just to be felt in a and shown. And so it provides something of a riverbank, let's say, for the process to flow. Other containers could be the natural world. We might go into nature. I've done this myself, gone on walks into the woods and just let it out. The trees don't judge, you know, they're very forgiving. They're beings. I believe they're beings, you know, however you might sense nature by it. But it's a there is a sense in the, for me at least, that it's a container. And it can be quite helpful if we're a bit shy around people. Well, yeah, trees won't judge us and give us advice. So that's something you might try, even if you're wanting to find a place. So the natural world are that, and maybe there's community. There's actually a group of people that could gather together. We'll look at this on the course a little bit. There is a kind of growing emergence of grieving in community grief circles, or just listening circles, safe spaces. Where that can be held and witnessed and not judged. Maybe you have that already. Maybe it's not specifically about grief. Maybe it's just a place you have that's where you can be listened to. But yeah, my sense is our grief is longing, like it's longing to be met. It's longing for a container. So it's a kind of matter of finding that. So one more thing, and then I'll open to questions. So there's something that someone mentioned earlier about with grief, that we're worried if we feel it that it won't stop. It's like a bottomless feeling. Perhaps like if I touch this, it'll never end. Now I want to try and get this right, but for someone asked Francis Weller this, or he might have addressed it, and might have even addressed it in his book. It's almost it has that quality because grief's never met. Like it's never hit a boundary before. So it's almost like it's roaming around inside this big boundaryless space inside of us. And that makes it feel so huge. It's when it's met, when it can be met in this container, actually it stops feeling bottomless. It doesn't, it's no longer, because it has a container, it has a kind of place to go. Somehow, because it doesn't have a place to go, it has this quality of endlessness. I don't know why that image sort of made sense to me, but and my experience is it hasn't gone on forever. It might go on for a long time. It might take a while. It might, but it's never gone on forever. I guess, yeah, it comes back to this idea of containment. So, yeah, I just want to pause there for any questions or wonderings. Feel free to speak or something, put in the the chat about the gates of grief. We'll come on to that on a bit later when I mention the topics of the course. But yeah, he very beautifully articulates these different kinds of grief. So not just the loss of people we love, but other kinds of grief too. But yeah, just pausing around this anything I've said so far? Containment. Feel free to speak or put anything in the chat. Great. Songs and music are nice. Yeah, definitely. You know, I think sometimes I want to watch a film that's going to make me cry because it's like the kind of container. Like, and you know, this gets marketed, doesn't it? It's like it. Anyway, I'm okay with that. It's like, oh yeah, I kind of, but I find that's interesting. It's like there are that we kind of some part of us wants to be held in that, even if it's by the sort of very perhaps slim container of a story or a film. But it's something, isn't it? It allows the truth to be felt. Yes, I'll repeat what I said about grief feeling huge. Yeah, so when grief isn't met, it feels huge, basically. Grief needs to be met, and if it isn't met, it feels huge because it's not met. It's like a sort of it's like something roaming around in this very big place looking for someone to hear it. And if there's no one there, then it kind of roams forever. And somehow that's and that again, it sort of leaves this sense of, that's one part of it, that it leaves a sense that it's never going to end. I mean, the other part of that is there might well be a lot of grief that hasn't been met in us because we live in such an unwelcoming culture. So there's two things together, I think, make it feel like we have sort of this bottomless kind of pit. But all it needs is some containment. Well, not all it needs. The first thing it needs is a little containment and a bit of welcoming. Yeah, any other songs and music. That's why I mentioned that, because someone put in the chat, songs and music can be containers. Yeah, Annette, please.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering about grief that is constantly refreshed. Like I'm thinking about climate change, especially, right? There's seems like every day you can find a news article about something new that's now happening,
Yeah, right.
something that's worse. And so it's in that way it feels bottomless,
Yeah,
because
sure.
it's constantly adding. So if there's a difference in with that, yeah, that's my question.
So, say the question again. The heart, which is like.
Well, what you were saying about it being feeling so big and bottomless, there's a sense of sometimes there's a grief that, like a loss of a parent, where, well, I guess maybe it would still be bottomless because you might think of new situations where they aren't there. Like there's a continuity to it, but it feels like climate grief is maybe a little bit different in that it's constantly fresh in a different
Yes.
way.
Yeah, sure.
If it maybe it needs a different kind of containment, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering it might do. And it's maybe it's also a different kind of, you know, grief is very specific, you know, specific in a way, isn't it? Like when we feel like, and that's a very specific situation. I'm just aware that, and it's not finished. It's ongoing, isn't it? And there's something around the death of a loved one, the where there is obviously this, it just feels different, doesn't it? It's a different quality to it. So I don't really have an answer right now, but I think it might need a different kind of container for certain, and different kind of action even. You know, there's yeah, it commands maybe a different kind of response. I don't know what that is right now, but yeah, didn't say the loss of a loved one or something like that. And what's also coming to me is, you know, how we're how we can easily over fixate on what's difficult and what's painful, and forget to resource ourselves, or forget to get to connect with joy and just the kind of everyday things that really nourish us. You know, kind of the media, particularly, are very, you know, that's kind of how it works, isn't it? They tell us all the bad stuff, and so that's another piece around all this, isn't it? I mean, not that that means that thing isn't happening. But we're sort of bombarded, aren't we, all the time, and that's can be hard to deal with when it's not countered. Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the comments. Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. Can cause shame. Yeah, shame is another one of these. I didn't mention this. Yeah, we have these kind of accompanying feelings that come with grief: rage, numbness, fear, shame. And these are all definitely in the territory. Yeah, I would think that having experienced containing would give one hope that the grief held would not be endless. Yeah, exactly. That's a great way of putting it. Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah. Yeah, Roman, please.
Hi, I have a little question. When I'm alone, I'm not feeling so much this grief, but when I'm going like meeting my family and contacting them and feeling, and I starting, so then I need maybe 2 or 3 days after to recover from all the, yeah, I can call it grief somehow, and I have a fear that I'm sort of will go there and will not return. So if I will go there in this grief, I will not return back because I sort of not the soul not not will not solve the problem, but I will somehow create this problem instead of solving it.
Yeah, so if I hear you right, you're there's some worry that you'll get and kind of won't come back from that grief. Is that the
Yeah,
picture? Or is there something more than that?
that I engage with is too much, and
Yeah, right.
it's not really my thing.
Yeah. I guess I'm gonna go. I don't know if his aunt answers what you're saying, but I suppose if something calls to me, I tend to think, all right, it wants attention, like that. It's wanting to be met, and I sort of try. Like these days, I trust that. Now, of course, people's situations are unique, but somehow, like if grief is calling to me, okay, I'll spend some time with it, and trusting that it will that it's like a river, it kind of flows, and then something happens, then it ends, then there's the next piece, and then there's the next thing that happens, and like there's a kind of I mean, yeah, I'm not sure quite if that's quite answering your question really. It sounds like there's something more specific you're getting at. You say a little more if that would be okay? Or
No, I think you're answering. You said like it's calling for me because it's sort of it's repeating, and yeah, so it's asking for that. So I thought,
Yeah,
yeah.
right. Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, if something keeps knocking, then it's like, okay, I best answer the door. That's the principle. And yeah, and but finding a way of doing that can be that's supportive. So hence a container or a good friend or some kind of place where we can express that. I mean, I think it's really important to let grief out. I don't necessarily mean, let's say, crying, and that's one part of it emotionally, but also just finding ways of expressing it, poetry, like having it out there, writing, singing, drawing, like this thing, but it really needs to be out from up here. It needs to be out of the body, out there somehow. So yeah, one of the pieces we'll look at in the course is what I call self-made ceremony. So how we can make ceremony that expresses something of our grief, even if that's very simple and kind of made up. I think that's people have always made up ceremony. That's how ceremony is always done. Yeah. So that, but it's giving it external some external space to live. That's what I wanted to talk about. Okay. So I wanted to kind of.
Can I say something, Peter?
Oh, yeah, Amy, yeah, please.
Yeah, I'm just, what's coming up for me, I'm just thinking about how every now and again I'm presented with a little doorway to accessing the grief, underlying grief that's probably there. I don't feel it very often, but every now and again there's a little doorway.
Right.
Where all of a sudden it wants to come out. And what I'm, every time that I'm just thinking about this, every time this doorway has presented itself, there's something in me that doesn't want to let it out. Or,
yes.
And it's usually something very small that'll set it off. It'd be like watching a film or somebody speaks to me a bit too sharply.
Yeah, right.
And those are the little doorways for me. And I'm just wondering, and the other day something like this happened and I really, really wanted to just let it out. And then I thought, no, this is going to turn it into a big thing. And they're going to think, well, not understand why I'm getting so upset. But it wasn't so much what the interaction that was upsetting me. It's like, this is something that's wanting to let something out. And
that's right.
And it was a shame. It was a real shame for me to not be able to have the freedom to.
Yes.
To just, oh, it's not. And I'm always waiting for that moment of grief to come out during the focusing. And of course, you know, when I'm there for it, it's kind of hiding somewhere. It's not, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, really.
I want to come out in those moments when I'm a little bit triggered or something, but those little doorways or openings present themselves. And,
indeed, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's something in me that doesn't want to go there because, yeah, anyway, just sort of interesting thing that came up.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. I love that image of doorways. And yeah, these doorways do present themselves. And maybe it's a good opportunity to let it come. Yeah, because sometimes if we're sort of a bit more deliberate about it, it might not happen. I've certainly had that kind of experience. Just because we set up an intention, it's like grief's got this kind of also this kind of quality sometimes of being a bit wild and like won't. Do what it's told in a good way. Like, well, I'm not coming just because you want me to. Like, there's some, and also it's very sensitive to its container. It's very sensitive to whether it's really going to be welcomed. So yeah. Yeah, great. Thanks. Someone ping in a chat. The sorrows of the world. You're one of the five gates of grief. One of them is, the sorrows of the world, you know, and that's we carry that in our body. That's what I've been noticing the last few days, you know. In fact, I was away at the weekend. I had no idea what's going on in the news, and so I was just immersed in the forest for 3 days. It was really lovely, and then then I started hearing what had been going on. Oh yeah, and it really, yeah, it did begin to. Took a couple of days, it really began to filter into me. Like, yeah, I'm really feeling the sorrows of the people of this world, you know. And it's, yeah, we can, we do, we feel that. Even if it's not happening to us directly. So, yeah, it's containment. So, yeah, I want to do a little exploration. I kind of, well, not really exploration, I got grounding, a guided process of just embodying what feels good or okay or resource right now. So it'll involve a little bit of just noticing our bodies, and we'll invite a little bit of just contact with yourself through your body. Maybe some words you might tell yourself. But think of it as an exercise in not going anywhere. So, oh no, I've got to go and find something and do something and make something happen. It's more like just noticing how we are right now. So I'll say a few invitations to lead this. Feel free to follow them. Feel free to do your own thing. And we'll give a little bit of space how it was afterwards. It'll be like 6, 7, 8 minutes, something like that. I hesitate to call it grounding because that's just really any one quality that might be there. But it's, yeah, let's say it's being present with ourselves with empathy, something like that. So guided exercise in doing that. Yeah, thanks. Just saying thanks. Thanks to Kevin, what you brought in the chat. Lovely. So yeah, let's begin. So you can have your, if you want to turn your camera off, feel free. If you want to have your eyes closed, eyes open, do what feels right. Yeah. And so maybe just beginning to notice the space around you, even if your eyes are closed, you know, you can probably sense the space around you. Here you are. Here's your body, and sense, particularly sensing its support, whatever's holding it. Beneath you, behind you, the weight of your body, or the connection, the contact, somewhere there's your body being held. So let it be, really let it be supported. Might you even invite the body to rest into it a bit more. So not forcing that process, but letting it be held. So wherever that contact is, sensing that, and from there maybe just sensing the rest of the edges of your body, your skin, your clothes, sense of posture, the space you take up. And from then within that, maybe you might just sense your breath as it is. Throat, chest, belly. Sensing the movement there. Wherever that is for you. And then there's, within all of that, there might be what's alive in you right now. And specifically, if there's anything in you feeling touched or sad, or even just physically some kind of ache or soreness, or even if that's not there, encouraging you or inviting you to just place your hand on your body. It could be on your chest. I find that place, but it might want to go somewhere else, so don't override a sense of where your body might want some company, your heart might want some company. Like a gentle hand that says, if it had words, it would say something like, I'm here. I'm here. But particularly if there's anything shaky or troubled, you're here, noticing it, being with it. And there's the whole bigger body, and the body being supported, being with it too. Even around you, the room, and beyond that, the land, around that, all of that is here. Holding your body, and your body holding whatever might be in there right now. I am here. And sensing how that is, maybe it brings some difference, feeling all of that and your own contact with your body. Maybe not, and that's okay. And sensing anything that feels okay in all of this, or stable, or even a little bit all right. Maybe it feels good just to sense your breath or your hand in contact with your body, or just some stillness, whatever feels good, just sensing that quality, having it for a while. As we enter the last minute or so of this exercise. Okay. And gently bringing that to a close. Looking around if your eyes have been closed. Maybe moving a little if you've been still. The body likes stillness and also likes movement sometimes. Let it move. Movement can be very resourcing, you know, for dealing with trauma, with overwhelm. Bessel van der Kolk, some of you might know his work on trauma, and he talked about, you know, how many cultures have movement or disciplines built into them, particularly older cultures. Qigong, or it could be dance, or like ceremony. There's something about allowing the body to move. It's very healthy and good for our being in so many ways. So anyway, just wanted to say that. Yeah, let's just pause there. I want to say a little bit about focusing, what focusing is, very briefly, a little bit about the course that's coming up. But yeah, maybe just inviting a couple of anyone, how that was during the exercise. Yeah, just a couple of comments, two or three people, if they want, they could put something in the chat. Or particularly, I really love this bit of this just self-contact. For me, that really helps. Maybe it's new to you, maybe it's familiar, maybe it doesn't. But I'm just, yeah, anything that you want to say about that process. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, self-contact, especially hand on the heart, yeah. Yeah, I'm also a safe container. If we can be a safe, yeah, that's cool. We can be a safe container for ourselves. Isn't that amazing? Thanks. It also felt like a container holding my back, which had been tense all day. Lovely. Thanks. Great. Thank you. I want to say something about not being an expert, particularly when and maybe that connects to something about the course. Maybe I'll say that later, actually. So yeah, something about focusing. Sorry, just a little backtrack a bit. So focusing as a practice, for those who don't know it, really in essence, in its heart, is about, how would I put it, that the body holds, I won't say the body, but any some beneath our usual kind of way of being in the world, there's a whole other way of being that has wisdom, has empathy, has a living process that if we tune into can bring a lot of healing and change. Focusing kind of allows, points to that truth, really. We're not just thinking beings. We're, this body is kind of, has a innate wisdom and intelligence that we can tap into. And some people have this very naturally, you could say, but for some people, focusing is a very natural skill they have already. You're already doing it, I'm sure. And, there may be ways in which you can learn it if it's hard for you, or do a bit more of it. So there's this kind of structure, a form around focusing, where there's these steps. You get taught these steps and also taught how to hold oneself in that process, but also work in a paired practice. So it has these forms of solo focusing or focusing with another person, even in groups. So there are these kind of structures that can help focusing to happen. But in essence, it's really about just being alive to your bodily experience and all that it holds. Really. It has many applications. It shows up in therapy. It shows up in creative work. It shows up in trauma. It's one of those things that underpins a lot of other approaches these days. Lots of different ways of applying it, and working with grief or working with difficulty or emotional tangles is only one aspect of it. I've done focusing courses on focusing on spirituality, focusing on decision making, focusing on dreams. You can apply it to all sorts of different contexts. But yeah, the course I'll be doing is around using focusing to explore this territory of grief. And I want to iterate. I'm not coming really as an expert, more like we're all, and I'm coming as someone who's traveled in those lands a little bit, into that forest. Let's call it a forest. But you have your body and your knowing about it that you'll be bringing too. And we'll be traveling, we're creating a safe container together and just entering into this territory of grief on this 6-week course. And we'll be meeting some of the guardians, the gatekeepers of that landscape. That's one of our themes. We'll be looking at the different kinds of grief. Someone mentioned the five gates of grief. That's one model, but we'll be looking at that. We'll be looking at containers, how we can create containment and safety. We'll be looking at what grief needs. Community or containment. We'll be looking at self-led ceremony. We'll do it, even do a little bit of ceremony together, something very simple online. And also, we'll have someone joining, a colleague joining me called Bethany Rivers, and she'd be doing some writing workshops with us. So, writing's a wonderful way of stirring the pot, of kind of opening and kind of coming at grief in a non-linear way through story and metaphor. So, I'm really excited about that too. So yeah, just to say, little outline of that course. That's beginning on November the 2nd. It's an evening course in the UK. It's a morning or afternoon, depending on where you are in the States or other places. I'll be sending out details of that anyway, so know you'll get that. But it's a course for those who know focusing partnerships, at least a very bare essential. So if you don't know that, and or you have something close, let me know. And if you want to come on the course and you're not sure, just get in touch. Because sometimes people have parallel experiences and it might work. So do let me know about that. So anything about that before we conclude at least that part of our seminar for today? Questions about the course or anything I've said? Just reading some of the comments. Great. Feeling soothing and grounded, a shift of what was present. Lovely. Okay. Lovely. Thanks. Great. So that's the official end of our seminar. I'm going to add an unofficial piece now. So I'm going to stop the recording.